All of us need to go to the doctor from time to time, but for adults with disabilities, finding a medical provider can be a challenge. A 2022 study published in the journal Health Affairs found some doctors try to avoid treating patients with disabilities. This is Cincinnati Edition on WBXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me now to talk about the challenges patients face and the expansion of a center in Cincinnati that offers more accessible care are Center Director for the UC Health, Timothy Freeman, MD, Center for Developmental Disabilities, Dr. Lauren Wong. Welcome, Lauren.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being here. Empower Me Living co-founder and president, Emily Kendall. Thanks for being here, Emily.
Thank you for having me.
And Ohio State University associate professor in the Division of General Internal Medicine, Brittany Hand. Welcome, Brittany.
Thanks so much. Happy to be here.
UC is a financial supporter of Cincinnati Public Radio. Brittany, what are some of the challenges that people with disabilities face when it comes to accessing care? What makes it more difficult sometimes for them?
I think the biggest one that I've come across in my work is really the lack of providers that feel confident in providing care for this population and are even willing to do so, frankly. And so that kind of creates barriers to care for people with disabilities in trying to find an adult care provider. They may have a really great pediatrician that they've seen for many years, but when it's time to age out of pediatric care and find adult primary care providers, that can be really challenging for folks just due to the lack of providers with that expertise.
Emily, we were just talking about this before we went on the air. You have a son with Down syndrome. Talk about, as a parent, sort of thinking ahead about that.
Thank you, Brittany. You hit on so many of my concerns. We're very fortunate to be followed by the Thomas Center at the Department of Developmental and Behavioral Pediatrics at Cincinnati Children's, and they serve as the quarterback for Luke's care. They are a team that specializes in Down syndrome, and they help connect us to other specialists throughout the Cincinnati Children's Network to get Luke the care that he needs while supporting us in the background. And he's going to age out of that system, like Brittany said, and what happens? Luckily, here in Cincinnati, we are working on a solution. We have one, and we're here to help it grow and see it thrive, and then also expand that model to other places so that more primary care physicians are comfortable serving people with DD.
Yeah. Lauren, are the challenges different for people with physical disabilities, adults who have physical disabilities, as compared to adults who have intellectual disabilities or developmental disabilities?
The group is so diverse, which is the beauty of the work, really. But it's also a challenge when you're trying to educate future providers to care for the population. And it's one reason that we needed to expand not only our team, but our physical space to be able to accommodate our patients that have certain physical disabilities that haven't been able to even access a building with a primary care physician. If they don't have rooms that are big enough for large wheelchairs and multiple staff members, you know, if they don't have Hoyer lifts to be able to help a patient get on an exam table, if they don't have scales that are large enough to weigh, you know, a large wheelchair. So taking into account physical accessibility for those patients, but then also we needed sensory rooms, you know, sensory modifications throughout the space for some of our patients with autism and other sensory issues that can find care inaccessible because of those challenges. So yeah, very diverse group of people.
Yeah, for sure. I referenced this study from 2022 that found doctors were turning away patients with disabilities. It wasn't focused specifically on developmental and intellectual disabilities, but it was doctors were turning away, you know, patients with disabilities. I want to ask you first, Brittany, is there not enough training when it comes to care for these patient populations? I mean, you mentioned confidence. Lauren was just talking about the facility itself and the kind of accommodations it needs. But what about the confidence of the physicians who are going to be providing this care? Talk to me about that.
Yeah, for sure. There are I think less than 50% of physicians in a recent study that I'm aware of reported feeling very confident in providing care for patients with disabilities. And so I think that is a huge issue. And that really does speak to the need to embed training for these providers into their medical education. And so that's something that I'm working on in my work to develop a training program for resident physicians. So they've already graduated medical school, but they're still in training in internal medicine and family medicine to try to improve their confidence and their willingness to provide care for patients with disabilities. And so I think that there's a growing need for, you know, educational initiatives like that.
What do you think, Lauren? Is there enough training for doctors when it comes to treating patients with disabilities of a variety of kinds?
No, not even close. So when I was going through medical school, we didn't even have any developmental disability curriculum. At University of Cincinnati College of Medicine, the Freeman Center has really taken a lead to make sure that all students will receive training throughout all 4 years of their medical student education. And then we have elective experiences for students that are in their fourth year of medical school if they want to get more advanced training. And then we have those same electives through residency. And then we actually started one of the first fellowships, a developmental medicine fellowship, for one of the first fellowships in the country, actually, to be able to train people who want to practice developmental medicine in their career. So yeah, there's just nowhere near enough training right now.
And your center is focused on patients with developmental disabilities, but clearly some of those patients also use wheelchairs and have other physical disabilities that you need to accommodate the center, right?
Yes. I mean,
there's some overlap there.
Yes, absolutely. So the majority of our patients, when you look at a breakdown of our population, the majority of our patients have autism. And then we have a very large patient population with Down syndrome, cerebral palsy, and then some rare genetic syndromes too. So,
yeah. Emily, when you hear this as a parent, I mean, you also work you're very focused on housing for people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. But when you hear this as a parent, when it comes to medical care, you mentioned that your son's getting care at Cincinnati Children's right now that you're very happy with. Does this give you some comfort to know this center is here that Lauren is running? Or what are some of the pieces of the puzzle that you still kind of worry about as a parent?
Wow, so many. Lucy, as all parents do. This is why I'm dedicated to helping the Freeman Center in any way that I can, because I know the ripple effect that it can have not only on the greater Cincinnati community, but it can serve as a model for how to do this across a country. It's important that we all understand that autism is increasing with 1 in 36 cases. I believe that is the correct statistics. Brittany might be a little bit closer to that and know, but this is impacting more and more of our fellow citizens and their family members. So it's really imperative that as a community we pull together to get quality care on the table. And that is very correlated with housing as well. Those two are interrelated.
Yeah. We're talking about the problems that adults with disabilities can have when it comes to accessing health care. Have you or a loved one run into these problems? Give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Lauren, talk to me a little bit more about some of the specific services or features that your center has to really accommodate patients with intellectual and developmental disabilities so they can get the health care they need.
We always say we're really trying to be the welcoming access point that allows adults with developmental disabilities to be able to access the broader healthcare system. So we are one place, but we hope we can open the door to be able to access all the specialists that are available in the adult health care world. So at our center, in addition to, you know, the physical space that we're going to have in the near future in September 2025, when we move into our much larger space, we also have a lot more resources than you're going to find at a traditional family medicine practice. So we have a primary care backbone, and then we have a really robust behavioral health program. So we have psychiatrists, psychologists, we have therapists. It's actually really hard to find mental health therapy for adults with developmental disabilities because of some of the communication challenges. And the assessment tools to screen for depression and anxiety don't necessarily translate to the population. We have a dietitian to help manage patients that have G-tube feedings, which is a percentage of our patients. We have a community navigator that connects patients to, you know, important resources like housing, like transportation, meaningful employment, different social determinants of health, county boards, you know, being that liaison to community resources. We have a pharmacist, we have a physical medicine and rehab doctor that can help with functional mobility and quality of life. Like, how are you interacting in your community? You know, are you able to go out and work? Are you able to go out and socialize with the people that you love? So we have, and we're adding services all the time as we expand. So we're doubling in size physically, or not doubling, 10 times.
Wow.
10 times the size physically. So we have to expand our team as well.
My goodness. Mm-hmm. And what are some of the specific concerns that you hear from patients or from their family members in terms of the obstacles they've run into previously before they find you, before they make that connection?
Yes. Oh my gosh. Everybody says, what is my future going to be after I leave Cincinnati Children's Hospital? That was the fuel that kind of lit my fire to try to tackle this problem, because we spend more of our lives as adults than we do as kids. So there's so much investment in the pediatric health system, but people are adults more than their, you know, a bigger percentage of their life is spent in adulthood. So what is the future healthcare situation in adulthood? That's the main concern. So when we see patients and families for the first time, oftentimes they cry in the exam room just saying, I am so glad that we found you, that we know that we're going to have support throughout our lives.
Yeah. Emily, you mentioned your own concerns for your family. Is that something you hear from other families too? Just the worry about, hey, what's going to happen when we can't go to this pediatrician anymore?
Yes, I identify with that so very much. What they're doing is replicating something very similar to the interdisciplinary model that we experience at Cincinnati Children's. And that is so important. And I think Lauren hit on a really good point about how we spend more time in adulthood, and adults with intellectual and developmental disabilities are living longer. And we've invested so much in early childhood, early intervention, and pediatric care that is the fruit of our labors in that area. But now it's time we need to step up the focus on adults. And that's why this work is so important. You know, 40 years ago, if my son would have been born in 1982 when I was born, his life expectancy would have been about 30. Now it's 60. So he is going to outlive me and my husband. So knowing that he will have access to care, and the next thing is housing, that will help us sleep better at night.
Well, we're going to continue our conversation after a short break. And later in the program, film critic T.T. Stern Enzi will talk about some film and streaming adaptations you might want to check out or you might want to avoid. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're continuing our conversation about the problems that adults with disabilities can have when it comes to accessing healthcare. My guests are Center Director of the UC Health Timothy Freeman MD Center for Developmental Disabilities, Dr. Lauren Wong, Empower Me Living co-founder and president Emily Kendall, and Ohio State University Associate Professor in the Division of General Internal Medicine, Brittany Hand. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100, or you can email talk at wvxu.org. Right before our break, Brittany, Emily mentioned that people with developmental disabilities, intellectual disabilities, are living longer than they did a generation or two ago. Excuse me. What are some of the implications of that for the healthcare system?
You know, I think it's going to be really important to, you know, as we've talked about already in this conversation, recognize that, you know, of course, people with intellectual and developmental disability, children with intellectual and developmental disabilities grow up and become adults with intellectual and developmental disabilities. And adults with intellectual and developmental disabilities eventually also become older adults with intellectual and developmental disabilities as well. And so I think it's really important, you know, that what has previously been a really heavy emphasis, you know, on pediatric research and care for this population, we need to start catching up, you know, as we've already mentioned on this segment, you know, trying to catch up really and making sure that we're providing appropriate care and care that meets the needs of this unique population as they age into adulthood and then also into older adulthood and the unique considerations that come with that as well.
Lauren, how does that figure into your work at the center that you direct and also the implications for maybe what this center could show other universities around the country?
Yeah, well, really, that's a huge reason that we positioned ourselves, we were created in this academic health system, right? Because patients are going to need this full spectrum of care throughout their lives. A lot of our patients have a lot of medical complexity. So it was important for us to be in a system, in a health system that had access to multiple subspecialties. We didn't want to do just a siloed project where there would be, you know, not the continuity of care that you are used to in the pediatric world, that people are used to at Cincinnati Children's, where they have access to all these subspecialties. Also, if patients need to be, you know, as people get older, patients need to go visit the emergency room. They need to be admitted to the hospital. We wanted there to be that continuity between the outpatient world, you know, at the Freeman Center and then their inpatient experience so that no matter where they access the health system, they're welcomed, they're embraced, they feel like they're part of it and there's not the barriers that historically there have been. So we're looking at a lot of things. We're looking at, we're starting up a nursing program actually that can support people in the community, in their homes, but also can be that liaison between the outpatient world and the inpatient world, visit patients when they're admitted and provide behavior supports to patients when they're hospitalized. Things, again, that the pediatric system has done really well, and we have to learn from that. And so part of us being in the academic health system was access to subspecialties. Part of it is our mission to training and education, as we've talked about the importance of that. And then another part is there's academic health systems throughout the entire country. What if we in Cincinnati can be the national model to be that can be replicated throughout the rest of the country so that patients, adult patients with developmental disabilities, can get the care that they deserve?
And let me ask you this, Lauren. I know your specialty is developmental disabilities, but what about adults with disabilities who aren't their physical disabilities? They don't have developmental or intellectual disabilities. Are there places in our region that are particularly good at providing care for them?
Oh, that's a good question. Our focus has been on the developmental, you know, developmental disabilities. And I think some of the physical access problems that we've described that we've really been intentional about designing our space. I mean, we have people with lived experience that are part of our design team that are really working on, you know, I mean, something as basic as adult changing tables in the bathrooms, right? Like things that we take for granted that people have wanted to see in our space. I don't think there are great models for that in healthcare right now. I don't.
Emily, you know, you brought up the fact that your son is going to outlive you, which every parent wants to see for their children, of course. What are the implications of these longer lives that people with, the children with intellectual and developmental disabilities are living, not only when it comes to healthcare, but when it comes to housing, which is so closely connected with healthcare?
So that's a great question, Lucy. Thank you. When we think about, you know, stable quality housing, we know that that is a social determinant of health. So I want to, for listeners, I want to give you a close to home example of what we're facing with housing and keep in mind how instability in housing can impact someone's health. So there are 72,000 adults with developmental disabilities over the age of 18 in the state of Ohio. That is more than the capacity of Paycor Stadium. 50% of those adults live with a caregiver that is 50 or older. Loss of a primary caregiver is one of the number one determinants for becoming unhoused, and/or you're asking someone to make a transition to a new housing situation under great duress because they've lost a primary caregiver. So this sometimes is an invisible issue, but I want people to imagine What if half the seats of Paycor Stadium fell into the river? That's what we're talking about. So that's why it's really important that we have a collaborative relationship with the Freeman Center so that we can work together on housing and health care.
We got an email from Barbara. Barbara writes, I have a brother who is 60 with developmental disabilities and autism. So appreciate this innovative approach. Also worked with Dr. Freeman in the mid-90s at the Ruther Avenue Family Medicine. What a compassionate man. Please mention his work that led to the center. Lauren, are you familiar with that? Can you tell us briefly?
Oh my gosh, yes. I would love to talk about Dr. Freeman. So he was my mentor and one of my best friends. And he really inspired my passion for this work. When I rotated with him as a resident, I just saw joy in medicine for the first time. And so that comment, I mean, he was a compassionate person. He was full of life and love for his patients. And his wife is actually, I'd like to talk about her, Holly Freeman. She has stayed really connected with the mission and vision of the Freeman Center and has been just a huge source of support and strength for our team as we've continued to live out his legacy.
Oh. Brittany, what has your research found as far as changes that healthcare providers could make to provide more effectively, to provide care more effectively for people with disabilities?
That's a great question. So, in the provider training that we're doing, which we spent, a year developing with an advisory board of autistic adults and family members of autistic adults, we wanted to make sure that we were including information that patients and their family members thought was the most important, most crucial for future healthcare providers to know. And after people go through our training program, what they're telling us is, gosh, like, these strategies really aren't that out there. They're just really high quality, patient-centered care that is customized to the needs of that individual patient that is in front of you. So that means, communicating in the way that works best for that individual patient and, asking before touching patients and asking if there's anything that you can do to make the visit more comfortable for them. And so it's really just these principles of really high quality patient-centered care that frankly, all patients would really benefit from, but we find are really crucial for these patients with intellectual and developmental disabilities.
Lauren, how big is the need for this care locally? Your center's expanding by quite a bit, you mentioned. The expansion will be open late next year, but does that mean there's a lot of demand for the care the center provides? Will your expanded center even be able to meet all the demand?
Yeah, we will never be able to meet all the demand. So we have 1,300 patients now, and we've just been limited by our size, physical space, and then that's prevented our team from growing at the rate that we'd like it to. But right now, we only serve about 7% of adults with developmental disabilities in Hamilton County. Small percentage. So that's why we really have to be so committed to our training and education mission, because the goal is that we can train people, right? And then they can go out in their own communities and provide this care to patients.
Yeah. Emily, as a parent, we've talked about, and as somebody who's working so hard on providing housing options for adults with intellectual and developmental disabilities, are you optimistic about the future for your son and for other children who are growing up and they're going to need a good place to live after their primary caregivers aren't caring for them anymore? They're going to need good health care. How do you look at the future?
Yes, I am very optimistic. And that is thanks to people like Dr. Freeman, Dr. Wong, Brittany, and a tremendous community of leaders all over this country that are working to tackle these issues. And Brittany touched on something that I think is really important. This is better for every patient, better for every community. It's not just impacting my son and my family. It has a tremendous ripple effect. So I'm very optimistic and look forward to a very vibrant future for all of us.
Yeah. How about you, Lauren? Are you optimistic?
Of course. We'll always be. You're not in this line of work if you're not optimistic.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Well, Dr. Freeman, he would always say, keep the faith. So, I think we all have to keep doing what we can every day to build a better future, to Emily's point, for everybody.
Yeah. Well, I've been talking with Center Director of the UC Health Timothy Freeman MD Center for Developmental Disabilities, Dr. Lauren Wong, Empower Me Living co-founder and president, Emily Kendall, and Ohio State University Associate Professor in the Division of General Internal Medicine, Brittany Hand. Thank you all so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Up next, film critic T.T. Stern Enzi is here to talk about some film and streaming adaptations you might want to check out or avoid. This is Cincinnati Edition.